Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we have the great Brent Zornman of the Houston Chronicle here to break down A&M and South Carolina and talk a little bit about the goings-on in the SEC right now. We have a guest picker on the show from KAGS TV here in College Station, Colin Deaver. And stay tuned for a new little segment we have this week, looking at some movies going on right now.
Movies!
So, that being said, let's get right into it. And I'll throw it to the guy here across the counter from me from the zone, the karaoke master of the My Aggie Nation podcast, also a former president of the United States, Zachary Taylor.
I prefer DJ because I get to run all these boards and everything, so I've got us at least up and running, so that's a positive. But yeah, we got BZ, we got the Deaves today, Colin Deaver. I mean, we got a good show.
This is kind of a Brian College Station Brazos Valley All-Star broadcast.
I don't like to brag, but it kind of is, and we're also pretty dang good at throwing the pigskin around before practice in the spring and in the fall.
Brent can throw that ball over them mountains.
I'll throw it right over them mountains.
Yeah, that lefty Sam Houston State pitcher action.
The loogie, I think that's what the left-handed specialist back in the day. Brent Zornman is going to be joining us. But yeah, of course, we've got a game this weekend. Texas A&M out South Carolina, and it's so hard to break down this game in just that A&M obviously is the clear-cut favorite. If South Carolina were to win, they probably have a 0.05% chance of they would have to really be able to do something great at home, Bryce Williams Stadium, in order to pull off this upset. But it's not like crazier things haven't happened, that's for sure.
Sure. I don't necessarily disagree with Deshaun Hall when we were asking this week about how they're preparing for this game. It would be easy to overlook. He said, kind of with a slip of the tongue, yeah, you know, it's like we prepare prepare for any game, not dissimilar to Prairie View A&M, which kind of everyone went, ooh.
Yeah.
But, well, yes, that you could say that might have been. He kind of, you know, corrected it back up and said, you know, like any other game too with Auburn and UCLA or any game we've had this year. And, you know, I think there is there's some truth to that. And yes, it's going to be maybe some bulletin board material or something if it gets out over that way. But, you know, there's not too much to be excited about this game. I think as we'll find out later when we make these picks, I think a lot of us might agree that this is going to be pretty easy for the Aggies and get some opportunity for some other guys to get some playing time out there.
We'll see, and it should be that way, and that's the thing. But again, I think, especially with it being an SEC game, and obviously South Carolina is going to be pretty hyped for this. Will Muschamp has a pretty good track record against Kevin Sumlin teams. I don't think it's going to be as easy for the Aggies as a lot of people are making it seem. I think the spread right now is at 18. I'm sure that will go down as it gets closer to kickoff, but man, I think it's going to be quite a bit like the Auburn game. I think it's going to be a win for the Aggies. I don't think they're going to be in jeopardy of losing it, but I don't think it's going to be a complete blowout like a lot of people think.
Well, if to follow your train of thought a little bit, if it's going to go that way and be a little bit closer than most people think, it's going to have to be a low-scoring game. Because if you look here at the SEC stats for the season, South Carolina scoring offense, last South Carolina, 14.2 points a game. Rushing offense, South Carolina last, averaging 90.8 yards per game. You have total offense, last in the SEC, 282 yards per game. I think you can kind of get the picture. Pass efficiency, last. The South Carolina offense has really, 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 really struggled this year. First downs, last. So, if South Carolina is going to have a chance in this game, they're going to have to make it very, very ugly and very, very low scoring. This might be, if it follows that thing, it's going to be a big night for Shane Trapuka.
Yeah, it would have to be like a 6-3, 10-7 kind of win. I mean, you're talking about not much offense going on at all, which, I mean, look, Will Muschamp's defenses are always going to be stout. I don't think Kevin Sumlin's going into this game with any kind of qualms about that. But the Texas A&M defense obviously has gotten a lot better. Something that's weird, though, if you look at the statistics overall for Division I teams in the U.S., where would you say A&M ranks right now? Because everybody's been talking about the defense, how great. Don't cheat. Don't be looking at my paper. If everybody's been talking about how great the defense is, how much better it looks, what do you think A&M is ranked right now? Overall.
In total defense?
In total defense.
I might be cheating because I think I looked this up for one of my stories yesterday, but I think it's around the 40s?
It's 77th, ooh, according to ESPN. That's behind Arkansas, one behind Arkansas, and one behind South Alabama. Now, that's ranking in total yards giving up. A&M is averaging 262.5 passing yards per game, 128.3 rushing yards per game. Now, the points is really what matters, Ryan. I think we can all agree on that. Only 16 points per game, which is really a heck of an average. But again, when you look at it overall, it's more or less a bend don't break kind of thing. And they're ranked 18th in defensive scoring allowed. So that's, again, that's what matters. But it has been very much a bend don't break kind of defense, great red zone defense. But in between the 20s, there's been a lot of yards chalked up against the Aggies.
Well, and if you kind of look at the personnel out there, I think sometimes in those positions in between the 20s is where Kevin Sumlin and John Chavis have elected to give Miles Garrett and Deshaun Hall some rest. If you look, you have Cunningham and Johnson in there a lot of times at defensive end. You might see a little bit more of rotating some of the other linebackers in when you're in their side of the territory or around midfield. And when things get moving towards midfield, that's when Deshaun Hall and Miles Garrett have come back into the game. And so that might be a little bit of a reasoning for that bend don't break, better red zone defenses. You might see the better personnel out there in the red zone, and that seems to have been the trend a little bit so far this year.
Well, and talking about what can South Carolina do or what do they have to do to be successful, because I think that's a legitimate point of view, because Texas A&M obviously looks like the on-paper favorite, but what is South Carolina going to have to do to somehow turn over this apple cart? And I think big plays. If they are somehow able to get a receiver beyond the secondary of A&M and whoever they've got playing quarterback on Saturday, who knows who the heck that is. But if they're somehow able to get a deep pass down the field, as we talked about, South Carolina more than likely will have to have it be a defensive game, a low-scoring game. And I think for South Carolina, for the Gamecocks, to score some points, they're going to have to pull off a big home run type play. And A&M has been prone to give up some big plays at times this year, both against Josh Rosen and last week against Austin Allen. Now, South Carolina had the same kind of firepower? Do they have the same kind of quarterbacks that those two teams have? No, but it can happen. And I think if South Carolina is going to make a run at this game, that's what's going to have to happen for them on offense.
Well, and I think that something that maybe surprised us a little bit this year, but I think Arkansas exposed a little bit that A&M's pass defense might not necessarily be the same as it was last year. Now, last year it was fourth in the nation, so it was
pretty dang good last
year. It's hard not to match up to that same kind of defensive output, but they were able to move the ball through the air pretty efficiently last week, and I think that's because A&M stacked the box a little bit more to try to defend against the run in Arkansas's big defensive front. But that's something that John Chavis and the defensive coordinators have talked about a lot this year, that, yeah, they might have to pull the safeties in a little bit to help defend against the run, because the linebackers and the defensive front last year proved that that wasn't something that they were necessarily strong with. And you've seen Armani Watts blitzing and walking in. You've seen Justin Evans in making tackles. And because of that, and you mentioned Nick Harvey earlier, you have these corners and some of the safeties out on the islands a little bit, having to work in one-on-one coverage, especially on third down, something that John Chavis mentioned on Tuesday.
Yep.
And it's just something that in man coverage, they're going to have to be able to do with how this defense is set up.
Yeah, and the aggressiveness that John Chavis has, that's what he's wanting to bring to this team. So obviously you're going to see more sacks. You're going to see things like we saw, hitting the tackles for loss, hitting the running back behind the line of scrimmage. But you can also be prone to give up a big play whenever you're talking about bringing in that secondary, not getting safety help up top. And I think we saw A&M get burned a little bit by that last week. Now, That being said, let's not take anything away from Austin Allen. Austin Allen had a really good game, and I think is a very underrated quarterback. True. After having seen him live, the things that he's done this year against TCU, I know it was one. You know, he's a pretty dang good quarterback, and Arkansas has some athletes at wide receiver. But I think also when you talked about the aggressiveness that A&M is bringing, the kind of pressure they're wanting to put up front on the quarterback and the running game, I think that kind of brings, I wouldn't say an imbalance, but it does take away a little bit from the secondary and being able to defend the pass.
You mentioned the national ranking for defense for Texas A&M being around 70, and we're talking about last year the passing defense being in the top five for sure in the nation. Real quick, hey, before you click on anything,
I'm gonna turn the tables back on you.
Where do you think A&M is ranked nationally in passing yards against allowed?
This year?
This year.
They are probably ranked 50s.
Final answer?
Yeah, I would think if 77th, and I said they were giving up 260-plus yards per game through the air, 50s or maybe 60s?
101.
Ooh. I lowballed big time on that.
So I think that, I mean, with how good the rush defense has been this year, that's what pushes you back into the 70s. I think I'm looking at NCAA.com. They're ranked, I believe, right at 70 in total defense. So a little bit of a differentiation there. But still, within a few spots of each other. That being said, once you get into some teams, not South Carolina, but once you get some teams who can throw the ball, Tennessee, Ole Miss, coming up here, Alabama a little bit, that might be something that maybe people aren't necessarily looking too much at that could really be a problem. Now, you could either argue one way, it's a problem because they haven't stepped up and done their job in defense, or schematically, that's what John Chavis has given some of these teams that aren't necessarily like huge home run threats, but can pass the ball a little bit. And depending on which way you look at it, will depend on how maybe you see A&M doing it against some of these teams that can throw the ball.
Well, if you're talking about defensive schematically, talk about offensively as well. With these teams that Texas A&M has played, they've been trying to come back from behind late. You know, when you're talking about UCLA and you're talking about Arkansas, they're slinging the ball around. They're not going to be running it a lot. So they changed their offensive schemes late in the ball game that includes more passing. So more attempts kind of goes hand in hand. You're going to get more yards through the air. But also, if you're Texas A&M, if you're able to stop it, then you don't even have to worry about that. You don't even have to get there. And I think we did see, and you talked about Nick Harvey, I think we saw him really struggle last week. There was multiple times, and times when he just plain got beat and had to commit a penalty to keep it from being a touchdown. And luckily, A&M for A&M, they were able to really stand up at the goal line and get some big plays. But I think the secondary, there are a few question marks there. And when you've got a lot of guys that are much younger, or guys. You know, they lost their two cornerbacks from last year. I think that was something that was coming into this year that was going to be a question. And how well will they be able to adjust as they continue to go through SEC play?
Here's my question for you, especially with how the game began to turn out in the second half against Arkansas. We knew, because of what John Chavis said, that A&M's defense would go more to that base 4-3 and to defend against a bigger Arkansas front. But we also said that we thought Donovan Wilson might rotate in with Priest Willis, maybe even Nick Harvey at cornerback, find some spots on him from on the field because he's one of the big playmakers on this A&M defense. Yet, he really didn't play against Arkansas.
He didn't play much at all.
Does that surprise you?
I mean, you know, John Chavis is going to have his own ideas of things, and Donovan Wilson is one of those guys where you can also use him up top, or you can even use him at linebacker if you felt like, but again, he's not going to be as big. And so I think that was, he's kind of more or less that nickel kind of guy, and I think that was an idea for John Chavis coming in. He was going to use the big guys that he had, which Richard Moore, we talked about after that game, you know, he was a linebacker that's a little bit kind of undersized, especially for the SEC, but he still came in and made a big play. And I think that was an idea, a mindset that John Chavis had coming into this game. He was going to go big. And Donovan Wilson's kind of that tweener. He's big for a safety, but he's small for a linebacker. So where do you put him? And yeah, he didn't get much playing time. I imagine he'll get a lot more playing time this week and as we go forward.
Sure. The other thing that you look at through this game is with Arkansas was definitely the play of Myles Garrett. He first half was a strong first half, a big tackle for loss that helps lead to that one of those defensive goal line stands. You have a fumble recovery. He got moved inside to the knows that to a defensive tackle position for some of those snaps, did really well there. Talked to his high school head coach at halftime, and he said, hey, do you remember back in Miles' senior year when we played Weatherford? They were doing some stuff on offense that really restricted what Miles was going to be able to do rushing from the outside, so he moved him to nose tackle. First time ever playing nose tackle, 8 sacks in the game.
Mm-hmm.
In high school.
Yeah.
I think he really, really excelled there. Now, on the flip side of that, he seemed to get hurt in the second half, and we don't know necessarily the extent of that injury, but he was able to come back in and run at, you know, somewhere between 80 and 90%, I think, of what his actual capability is, and was able to do okay out there. I don't think we're going to see a lot of Myles Garrett against South Carolina, especially if they can get the score, get a couple scores on the board early. I don't know necessarily. We probably won't see much of Ricky Seals-Jones. Another guy.
I don't think we're
going to
see any of Ricky Seals-Jones. I don't think he's going to play in this game. Whether or not, depending on this injury, again, Kevin Sumlin's keeping us in the dark on this. But even if it was a precautionary measure, I don't think Ricky Seals-Jones is going to play Saturday.
Right. Justin Evans, and I mentioned that he is 100% when we talked to him at the press conference, but you never quite know what that necessarily means or if you're completely telling the truth. So I kind of a long introduction to say this is a game where I think we'll be able to see a lot of different guys playing a lot of different positions that people will be able to, some of the coaches will be able to try some things out, assuming they can get on the board early. And because of that, we might not see a whole lot of these guys that have been banged up through these four games, especially last week.
Yeah, especially if things get out of hand early on and going into the second half. Justin Evans is fine. He's going to play. Kevin Sumlin would not trot him out in front of the media if he wasn't fine. If you know Kevin Sumlin, he's not going to talk about injuries. He doesn't want anybody to get the upper hand. Or I guess that's kind of the wrong wording. He doesn't want the media to snoop into things. That makes sense. So he wants to keep that to a minimum. He wants to help control the message. He's not going to put Justin Evans out there if Justin Evans is hurt and says that he's hurt or says that he's 80%. So Justin Evans will play, but as Travis was talking about, depending on where the first half, where you stand, I imagine there will be quite a few guys get playing time this game.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we have so much more to get to in this episode of the My Aggie Nation podcast, so we must move on. And we have a little bit of a special new segment here coming up on the Miami
Nation. Special treat.
A little special treat for you. So stay tuned for that next. Live via CB Radio Link out in his truck somewhere in Bryan College Station, I bring to you the Redneck Movie Reviewer.
How you boys doing over there?
Doing just fine.
That's good. That's good. Anyways, I just wanted to tell you what I went and saw last night. So I got up, me and my girl got out of our trailer, and we jumped in the car, the truck, and we drove to the movie theater. And anyways, I spent $15. $15 on popcorn and a large drink. She wanted her soda water, so we got her one. Anyways, we went to go see The Magnificent Seven. Now, the great thing about The Magnificent Seven is it's not just a remake. It's a remake of a remake. So that's something else. This is the third time that they've done this kind of movie. First, it was The Seven Samurai. Then it was The Magnificent Seven back with Yul Brynner. And you had Steve McQueen back in the day, Charlie Bronson. And then now you got the new Magnificent Seven. Well, this time they decided to go with Denzel Washington in there. They had a guy, Lee Byung-hun, who I believe played Billy Rocks that was in it. They had Chris Pratt, everybody's favorite funny man from Parks and Rec. And they had Ethan Hawke. So I was kind of excited about this movie and the fact that Antoine Fuqua, the director of Training Day, was bringing back Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington, who were just amazing in that movie. So I was excited about it. I'll tell you what, it was something that you can sit down and watch for 2 hours, but I was not that impressed with it. Unfortunately, you know, the storyline, it's been done before. Look, like I said, this was the third time that this movie has been made, and the storyline was nothing new. You know, you had a village of people that were getting knocked on by this feller. His name was Bart, and Bad Bart, I guess was his name. I don't have no idea. Anyways, he was played by one Peter Sarsgaard. Always seemed like he had the sniffles or something. I was thinking this guy was sick. He had the flu and needed to get a shot. But anyways, he was playing it, and of course, it was a Western, and Denzel, you know, no matter what he's doing, he's always a badass. He didn't give no Remember the Titan speeches or nothing, but man, he was fast on the draw with that gun. And then Chris Pratt, he was kind of my favorite. You know, he was like the fun drunk. You know, he's one of those deals. You go to every Christmas party and somebody gets too far into the punch. That's kind of the way that he was. And Ethan Hawke was this guy that was fighting along with his memories and things that, you know, were plaguing him from the past, you know, and he was a sharpshooter. And then Vincent D'Onofrio was a fantastic, fantastic actor. But for some strange reason, and beknownst to me, he decided that he wanted to go with some kind of weird voice in this thing. And it was a little off-putting. All that being said, I thought the video quality, the scenery and things, if you like mountains, if you like pretty pictures, I thought that was good. I really did. And the way that it was put together was very good. But in the end, it was just another remake. It's been done so many times. And the storyline, there were a few holes in it. Like, you know, I'm just sitting there asking myself, why the hell are you doing this? Why are you doing that? I mean, you know, anybody with any kind of sense would know not to do that. So, to me, I understood it. And any hero movie is going to be a little corny. It was eventful. It was probably definitely a guy's movie. Guys are going to enjoy it. I saw a lot of old people there. And, you know, I love old people. And they didn't seem to enjoy it, too. So, overall, I thought it was a movie that you can enjoy. But it was not going to be something to run home about. I'll give it 1.5 trailers.
What? That's it? 1.5?
1.5. Well, it depends. If you got you a double-wide trailer, that's a big trailer.
That is true. Well, that is the Redneck Movie Reviewer. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll have to keep your handle on location here to buzz you in next time we have a good movie that comes out.
Well, you boys got my number. I mean, y'all call me anytime. Y'all want to come down and have a cold beer. Y'all want to go fishing or hunting or something. Just let me know.
All right. Thank you, sir. Next on the My Agination podcast, we have the great Friends Ornament. And we are back at the My Aggie Nation podcast. We have the great, the talented, the great, cool uncle to all the younger...
The Uncle Rio.
Yeah.
Rico.
It's well,
not
just Rio. The cool uncle to all the younger sports writers and broadcasters here in Bryan College Station. That is Brent Zwornemann, the talented... A&M beat guy for the Houston Chronicle here to talk a little bit of A&M. Brent, how's it going?
Travis, you had me at great, but you know what I'll take is the fact that you said I'm more of a cool uncle figure as opposed to a fatherly figure. That's probably like 3 or 4 years away on the father figure.
Oh, yeah, no. You're the one that'll go out for now. Yeah, you're the one that'll go out and, you know, like do some karaoke and maybe go get a tattoo with us, right?
Oh, I'm in. You mean another one?
Yeah.
Cease is more or less the father figure, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, Cease is the crazy great uncle.
Oh, well, yeah, that is true. He could be both, depending on how embarrassed you are of your father or your great uncle.
Exactly. Well, Brent, down to the real business of it all. A&M, what have you seen from them so far? I think me and Zach have broken this down until our lungs were sore on what had this not only the defense has done to surprise us, but kind of what the offense has done to kind of improve week by week. As you've seen both this offense and this defense, is it impress you at all? Is it what you expected? Looking back four games in, kind of what is your take on what A&M's been able to do both on offense and defense?
I thought all along defense would be this team's strength. You know, if they're going to have any hope of competing for their first SEC West title, is going to be because of the defense. Defense has actually been a little better than I anticipated. I mean, this has not been a pancake schedule, you know, for the first month. You beat a ranked team in UCLA to open up with. You go on the road to Auburn. You beat a ranked Arkansas team. I mean, this 4-0 of soon to be 5-0 is a heck of a lot different than I think than the last 2 years. And so the defense is a strength as expected, but the offense has really come along. And I'll be honest with you, I was kind of critical of Trevor Knight early because I just thought he was so amped up early in games, even against like a team like Prairie View, where he was kind of throwing it all over the place early because he's just such an excitable guy. But I didn't know him that well, you know. And the thing is, he settled down. He's really become kind of that leader that this not just the offense needed, but maybe the whole program needed in terms of a player. Miles Garrett is certainly a leader on and off the field, and obviously by the way he plays, but he's a little more quiet. Trevor's the kind of guy who goes around the locker room, you know, patting guys on the back and constantly, you know, bringing up their hometowns to them and all those kind of things. And so he's exactly what this program needed. So, yes, that's been kind of more of a pleasant surprise, I'd say, on that front in terms of Trevor Knight's leadership. And then you just don't expect something like a Trevion Williams, true freshman running back from Houston, to do what he's done this early. I mean, his numbers were good at CE King High School, you know, pretty good. But for him to jump in and make this kind of impact early has really, really helped kind of springboard this offense moving forward. I mean, the fact that he busted loose for an 89-yard touchdown run against Auburn late, which actually turned out to really mean something. And then as the Arkansas defense wore down, I mean, Trevion Williams just got better and better. You know, and it's nice that they're able to mix up those runs a little bit with Keith Ford and James White as well. But Williams is probably been the biggest, I would say, surprise on offense. So defense, about what expected, but maybe a little bit better. And the offense has been more dynamic than I anticipated under first-year coordinator Noel Mazzoni.
Well, Brent, you're talking about Trevor Knight, and I think something that a lot of Aggie fans have taken notice of, and I know especially us in the media have, is kind of an inconsistency. It's almost like good Trevor and bad Trevor. I mean, you've got a guy who can make fantastic passes, what looks like NFL passes. I mean, when he hooked up with Josh Reynolds for that 90-plus yard touchdown pass against Arkansas, that was a thing of beauty. But then you also see him trying to complete screen passes, and he's underthrowing and overthrowing his receiver. But that might just be who he is. Maybe Aggie fans just have to come to the conclusion that, look, sometimes this guy's going to be hot, sometimes he's not going to be throwing the football.
I think that's a good way to put it, that's who he is. Because, as you pointed out, it seems like his deep balls, his intermediate balls, you know, a little further passing has been better than the short stuff, the short game. And so when I talked to some of the Oklahoma beat writers when he was transferring in, they said, okay, first of all, you're never going to cover a better guy, just a better person. But he is inconsistent. You know, he does tend to throw it all over the place, really. But I do think his long passing has been better. His deep passing has been better than maybe what we anticipated. And then you add in the fact that his running game, the running aspect of it has become a threat. You know, he tucked that ball twice and took off, what, 48, 42 yards against Arkansas. So suddenly you're giving defenses like Alabama and Tennessee in the coming months a whole lot more to think about. But yes, I don't think they're really shaking in their cleats right now about his short passing, his screen passing and so forth. But he has given them plenty to think about, because that pass to Reynolds on that 92-yard touchdown was a thing of beauty. I mean, you couldn't have placed it any better. I mean, like you said, it looked like an NFL guy dropping that in there. So, yeah. That is who he is. It's a long way of saying that.
I agree with you on that. The looking forward to this weekend, South Carolina coming up, I think it's a game that a lot of people aren't necessarily, like you said, shaking in their boots about. You know, you even have, we'll just say one of the players this weekend who kind of maybe not smartly alluded to how they're preparing for Prairie View A&M when we were talking to them yesterday. Kind of let that slip in, and then kind of went, oh, no, that's silly. This is an SEC competition. But when you go into a game like this against South Carolina, what are you looking for from A&M to kind of get a better picture of who this A&M team is maybe, or what the future holds for them with what they're able to do against the South Carolina team this year that has kind of struggled like they have?
I think the first thing that Kevin Sumlin's going to harp on all week and all Saturday leading up to kickoff there in Columbia is that Will Muschamp has had some success of late against the Aggies. Last year, an Auburn team comes in to Kyle Field, wasn't very good, really a down season, and yet Muschamp's defense, you know, holds its own. Auburn wins 26-10, and which was probably A&M's most embarrassing loss of the year, you know, in terms of it being on their home field to a not very good Auburn team. Then you back up to when the SEC started, and Will Muschamp was a coach of Florida when they came in and barely beat the Aggies in the SEC opener that year in 2012 when fans first started kind of getting the hint of who Johnny Manziel was. So someone's going to harp on that, and as he said this week, he said, hey, no matter what kind of team Will Muschamp is with, you can always count on his defenses to be salty. And really, South Carolina's defense has not been that bad. I mean, their competition hasn't been great, obviously, so far this year, but the defense has been okay. The offense is atrocious, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And meanwhile, Florida fans are down there saying, yeah, this looks familiar with the Will Muschamp team. So you would expect A&M's defense to have its way for guys like, first of all, I don't even know if we'll see Miles Garrett. Maybe not, based on the idea of maybe he just kind of needs to rest his ankle after what happened at Arkansas, where he went out briefly but came back in and, you know, obviously wasn't 100% at that point. And from all indications, he's not 100% this week. So even if he does play, I'm sure it would be limited time if they jump out to a big lead. And you're able to see quite a few of the backups, almost like if you want to go back to what the player said about Prairie View, when you saw so many guys get playing time. I think that's what they're anticipating, but they're also treating it as, hey, this is an SEC game on the road. Sure, South Carolina hasn't looked very good, but their guard will be up, I'll put it that way, because I know all this hype and everything that comes with it can end in a big hurry if their guard is not up. But I would expect to see quite a few players on both sides of the ball getting plenty of playing time in this one, and maybe some of the key guys getting plenty of rest going into the Tennessee game. And then, of course, a couple weeks after that, the Alabama game at Alabama. So, you know, they're looking ahead, but they're certainly not going to look past this game either, based on who the head coach is, for one thing.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, Brent, in that, you know, I don't think people are necessarily looking at this as a bye week by any means, or even a Prairie View A&M, as a Deshaun Hall might have let that one slip a little bit. I don't think that's necessarily what he meant. But when you're talking about a team that might be a little banged up, and having Miles Garrett getting banged up, of course, Justin Evans told us yesterday that he was going to be 100%. Kevin Sumlin really wouldn't expound on that at all. In fact, he wouldn't talk about injuries whatsoever.
Did you notice that when Justin Evans told us that, he told us that with a big grin on his face?
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I'm 100%, big smile. You know, it's like, almost like, okay, say you're 100%, even if maybe you're not quite there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did think that was slightly humorous that he kind of said it with a big smile on his face. I'm 100%.
Yeah, and of course, with Ricky Seals-Jones, I imagine that his injury, at least it seems like it's fairly severe. I know he took to Twitter and said that he'll be back and he'll be fine, but at the same time, Kevin Sumlin wouldn't even address that at all. So that leaves you scratching your head a little bit. And I know that you were in South Carolina a couple of years ago when they went, is that right?
Yes, I was there 2 years ago.
Okay, somebody who's never been to Williams-Brice Stadium, and I know, Travis, you're going to be going there this Saturday, but what's the fans are like? What are the fans like? What's the atmosphere kind of like there?
Yeah, and keep in mind, this at that time was it the opener for both teams? I think it was.
Yeah, and the SEC Network opening game too.
Yeah, so on a Thursday night, also, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm trying to kind of remember all that, but it was my impression of it was a great setting because everyone was so hyped. You know, the whole sandstorm thing, the place was packed, it was rocking. One of the things that kind of stuck out to like Cessna and I when we were kind of walking around that area is it's really not that nice outside of, you know, it's kind of a warehouse district type area. I mean, the immediate surroundings are pretty nice, and there's this stationary train that's through there that has all these cool things on it and so forth. So that all's kind of neat, but yeah, it's not the greatest settings for, or at least the outside environment is not the greatest for college football. But again, the fans were hyped. South Carolina had a lot of expectations. Steve Spurrier, I remember looking up at the side of the stadium and seeing this huge banner. I mean, it like stretched the side of the stadium of Steve Spurrier. I'm like, holy cow, man, talk about deifying someone before it should happen or so forth. But in all, that was quite a night. I imagine it won't be near as electric with the start they've had and kind of the obvious rebuilding process that Will Muschamp is at least trying to do here. So fans going for the first time, you know, South Carolina is kind of one of those places like Auburn, like Texas A&M, where it has friendly fans. You know, and they're welcoming the visitors and so forth, and they're all just kind of looking to have a good time. That was my early impression of South Carolina.
Gotcha. I'm definitely looking forward to experiencing some of that. You know, I went to Clemson back in 2009. It's the best sweet tea I've ever had in that press box. So I'm looking forward to maybe upping the sweet tea game in South Carolina. But when you I think it'd be too easy, Brent, to talk about predictions for this game. I think it would be taking quite the limb to maybe not take A&M in this one. But what would you say is some of the keys to the game for A&M or things that they should do or shouldn't do as they look ahead, maybe not the team looks ahead, but as we look ahead to the next games on the schedule? What are you hoping to see from this program and this team in this South Carolina game?
I would say specifically on offense that they're going to Noel Mazzone and Trevor Knight and company are going to do their best to mix it up to actually try and achieve that perfect balance, because you don't want to give Tennessee and then Alabama after that more things to kind of zero in on. You know, they'll go hard with their – you might see more of James White than what we've seen so far this season, throwing it around to different receivers, getting guys in there that aren't necessarily getting a whole lot of playing time, just doing a whole lot, not just pounding away – you know, in some sense, in terms of what they did against Arkansas, for instance, you know, because in that case, they're trying to win the ball game. This would be a deal where I won't call it a glorified scrimmage by any means, which is what I referred to the Prairie View game, but it is it's one rung above that, I'll put it that way. In other words, they're going to be doing a lot of different things. Now, the defense is going to do what it does, and one of the things there where they need to get better, we've talked a lot about the safeties, how strong they've been. Armani Watts had an incredible game. The defensive line is obviously emerging as one of the nation's best. Those cornerbacks are going to have to get some work and keep, you know, Nick Harvey had kind of a rough game against Arkansas, and they were able to overcome that. But those guys are going to have to get better moving forward at cornerback. So certainly keep an eye on that in terms of angling for some improvement against an offense that they can certainly work on some things against, and not really worry about getting too burned in that situation with what the front seven is doing at the same time.
Definitely. And just kind of going around the SEC a little bit this week, what's when you heard of the firing of Les Miles down there at LSU, what were your initial thoughts on that, and kind of who maybe will you see will slide into that position here at the end of the year?
Just not surprised at all based on the idea of what happened that we were all witness to last year at the end of the up in the press box at LSU on that weird Thanksgiving weekend, you know, with the idea that he was supposed to get fired, and then LSU starts playing pretty well against the Aggies. Next thing you know, they're announcing he's going to stay on. So you kind of got the feeling at that point it was just a matter of time. And John Chavis has alluded to it as well, like that he said that he told Les Miles, "Hey, this reminds me of Phil Fulmer at Tennessee, that they're just waiting to get rid of you." And it certainly looked like it. And
what's interesting, back in 2000-2001, I covered the Dallas Cowboys. The tight ends coach at that point was a guy named Les Miles. And I'd cross paths with him, you know, bump shoulders or whatever out on the fields. I would have never envisioned that, what, 16 years later, 15 years later, I was talking about this guy being this very, very successful coach at LSU, having won a national title, the Mad Hatter. You know, media loves him because he's so funny and off the cuff when he visits with us and so forth. I didn't see that guy at that time. So it's been kind of interesting to watch his career progression and where he goes from here. I don't know. I think he'll probably take a little time off. He seems like very much a family man. I mean, that's what he spends a big part of his SEC media days talking about, is his family. In terms of LSU, I believe they're number one target, and just like any prominent program's number one target as the season wears on is Tom Herman. Tom Herman is starting to get tired of fielding those questions, having his name come up, but it sure beats the alternative. I mean, it's better to be wanted because that means you're doing something right. And so I would say Herman would be their number one guy, but then you have to look around and say, okay, Jimbo Fisher was the guy at the end of last season, and that, for whatever reason, didn't work out. And then, you know, Petrino has a huge buyout in Louisville, but obviously an intriguing guy. I don't think you're going to see Art Briles return to a position that prominent this soon. I guess crazier things have happened, and he's a heck of an offensive coach, which is what the fans have been pining for. They feel like they've got the defense down. The offense is what's just really irked them at this point. So, but I don't think it'll be Briles. I would say right now they're going to go after Herman, see what happens. Also, Herman is a guy who has a lot of University of Texas connections with having been a grad assistant there. So I'll be curious to see what happens in Austin moving forward as well to this point. Should be interesting to see how it plays out with the hottest rising coach in the nation right now.
Well, the Brent Zorneman window is closing on this podcast. We are out of time. Thanks so much, Brent, for hopping on here. And my last question for you is, do you even Twitter, bro?
Probably not enough. Yeah, probably not enough. I think Twitter's kind of, in a way, made me gun-shy in some aspects, you know, where, what do they say, stay within your lane? Most of my Twitter these days is posting my stories and keeping it pretty low-key, but I probably need to do a little more of that, Travis. So I appreciate the encouragement.
No, more or less to ask the question of it. I will back Brent 100%. He is great on the Twitters. He's a must follow with all the videos and whatnot. What is your Twitter handle for those listeners out there who want to give you a follow?
At Brent Zorneman. I'll keep it simple, and that's BrentZorneman.
There you have it. That's the man himself, Brent Zorneman at the Houston Chronicle. Give him a follow. He does all the best A&M coverage for the Houston Chronicle, and just a good dude. So that makes it even better. Brent, thanks so much for joining us.
I'll take that. Hey, the best thing you can say right there is good dude. I'll take that above anything else, Travis. We'll see you soon. We'll see you in Columbia.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, BZ.
A week from last Saturday was a little bit of a weird run for me. I'm sitting in the hotel in Atlanta leading up to the Arkansas game and get a phone call that my grandfather passed away at 87 in Dallas. And it's a normal thing that happens to everyone and everyone's family members passing away, even when you're away on business and stuff. But it's fascinating. It was interesting couple of weeks for me following that, because I got to really dig deep into who my grandfather was. And being a sports podcast, I just wanted to take a few minutes to kind of share a little bit about him, because he was, as my dad said at the funeral, kind of the most interesting man in the world. Jack Brown grew up in Dallas, won a state title at Dallas Crozier Tech playing basketball, went on to play at SMU where he was an All-American. When he graduated, he was the career points leader for the Mustangs with only about 800 points. Graduated in the early 50s from SMU, 51, I believe that was. That's when he was the third-team All-American. He was a All-Southwest Conference guy 2 years in there, team captain, played under Doc Hayes there at SMU. Also in high school, he was the first Texas High School Coaches Association All-Star Game Basketball MVP, and still listed in that program. I remember when I was covering that whole event, getting the media guide and just kind of scrolling through it, and not knowing that my grandfather had been named an MVP in that game or even played in it. It was cool to scroll through and kind of catch his name there. But I think me and my family all knew about those accomplishments. It was some of the stuff that came out in going through to write his obituary that was really special. In his years after he graduated, he went and played for the college all-star team that toured around with the Harlem Globetrotters. And as a part of that, in 1951, played in the Rose Bowl in front of the largest crowd to watch a basketball game at that time. Over 30,000 people filled into the Rose Bowl and watched him play and his other college all-stars play against the Harlem Globetrotters, which is something really cool. He enlisted in the Army and actually played basketball and softball for the Army, traveling around, kind of building morale to have these all-star games at the different bases around the country, and was just a really great basketball player in those regards, and got to do all that kind of stuff. Went on and anything that my family wanted to pick up sports wise, my dad decided he wanted to do judo for a while. My grandfather did that with him, and while my dad kind of tapped out at a brown belt, said, "Yeah, this isn't necessarily for me." My grandfather kept with it, and at the age of 40, picked up his black belt in judo, fighting sparring with a former Olympian down in Dallas. Was able to write his obituary, but when you get through the stresses and everything that comes with covering a football season, and then the stresses of a family member passing away and not being able to really kind of bring your head above the water, I wanted to do something in writing for him a little bit, but I think that just kind of getting to talk about kind of my family's most interesting man in the world was something that I wanted to get out there and share with. He was a great person, great for my family, great sports guy, and really kind of a legend before even stats or things like that were kept in the Southwest Conference as far as basketball goes. So definitely a little bit of a cathartic experience to get to share about him and share about what he meant to my family and what he meant to sports in the Southwest. So thanks for that, and thanks for anyone who was able to read out the obituary and the kind words that came for the past couple weeks. We'll have college football picks coming up next.
Welcome back to the Miami Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. We have a special guest as we do every week, and he's just even more special this week. It's Colin Deaver of KAGS. Colin, how's it going, buddy?
Hey.
Hey.
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be back. You know, it's been, about a month and a half? I did some Olympic stuff. And it wasn't football season, so I'm happy to be on to do some picking.
You and Maggie Malone are our only recurring guests so far this season, so congratulations, sir.
Dude, and that is a huge honor, because Maggie is obviously an Olympian.
I just want to roll back the tape to last week and just go on have Zach go on record saying that he liked Lee better. So I just want to throw that little knife in there and let
you said that
happen.
On air?
Well, I mean, you know, I said it pre-recorded, but it stayed in for our podcast. So, yeah, basically I did.
All right.
But it's fine.
Well, I understand. Lee's the homie.
Well, so. You know, it's one of those deals. Lee's got the great hair, so you got to...
The salt and pepper.
The salt and pepper. Yeah. He's the silver fox, man.
He's going to be mad at us for talking about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, well, that's okay. He'll get over it. Of course, we're going to do our weekly pick'ems as we do every single week, and we always let our guests go first. And I guess, are we going to do it game by game, or are we going to do it just all at once for one?
Game by game.
Game by game. Okay, well, we can go ahead and do it game by game then. So we'll start with Colin. Guests go first. And I guess we'll go ahead and talk about the big one. That's Texas A&M at South Carolina. Who you got?
What is A&M? They're like a 17.5-point favorite?
Oh, man, you're going to make me start looking at numbers
sorry.
Now?
Think,
you got money on this, riding on this game now, Colin?
No.
A&M is 18-point favorites.
Ooh, I was close. You know, I asked for the line. It didn't really matter. Texas A&M. I'm picking them to win. Wait, are we picking them to cover or are we picking them just
to
win?
No, we're just picking them just to win.
Okay,
straight wins, losses.
All right, I'm picking Texas A&M to win on the road. South Carolina is last in the SEC in like four offensive categories, including scoring, total offense, rushing, and I think it's pass efficiency. They can't do anything offensively. Texas A&M's defense, even if Miles Garrett and Justin Evans aren't 100%, is going to be dominant against them. So I'm picking Texas A&M to go 5-0 for the third straight year.
Look at Colin bringing like facts to an opinion fight here. That's awesome. So there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A&M's going to be able to handle South Carolina really, really easily. South Carolina, as Colin said, has little to no offense, and A&M gets up for the South Carolina game. There's been those games in the past. What, two years ago with Kenny Trill when South Carolina was ranked and they went into town and took that game. So I think even if it wasn't going to be just a blowout because of the seal, I think A&M and Kevin Sumlin has South Carolina's number a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, you got to go South Carolina.
Well, Kevin Sumlin has South Carolina's number in that they've won the past two seasons and have won at Bryce Williams Stadium. But when we've seen the past couple of years, or at least whenever they faced each other in the past, Will Muschamp seems to have Kevin Sumlin's number. Of course, remember Florida, whenever A&M, their first game in the SEC, they lost to Florida. That was Johnny Manziel's first game as an Aggie. And then you're also talking about the loss to Auburn last year whenever Will Muschamp was a defensive coordinator. Aggies win, but I don't think it's going to be the big blowout that everybody's expecting. I think it's going to actually be closer. I'm not saying that it's going to be tough for A&M. I think they will get the win, but kind of reminiscent of Auburn, you know. It was one of those games where, yeah, at the final score, you see, well, A&M is up by this amount of points. But when you think about it, it wasn't as if they just ran away with that game. And I don't think that they're going to be able to do that. I don't think that that's the kind of team A&M is, really. I think it's changed a lot over the past couple of seasons. They're no longer one of those power offensive teams that's going to put up 50-plus points and be up on you 21-0 early on in the first half. I just don't think that's what this game's going to be. I've got Aggies, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as everyone thinks. So we got Texas A&M at South Carolina. All three of us are picking the Aggies, and so that's really nothing new. I guess we're homers. And we got another SEC team, two SEC teams, I should say. We got Tennessee coming off that big win over Florida at Georgia, and I guess I'll go ahead and kick it off. Tennessee's going to roll, man. And I say that, Tennessee has not rolled in any games yet this year, even when you're talking about Appalachian State. But Georgia is abysmal. They are so bad. And I have no idea why people rank them 12th. I have no idea why they're still ranked in the top 25, other than they lost to a pretty dang good Ole Miss team. But they still got trounced at home. I think this is going to be a pretty easy win for Tennessee.
Right. That Ole Miss is going to be good this year, and that is, you know, a little bit of an indication of the team that they are, because Ole Miss is a good team, but Tennessee is I think finally finding that stride that everyone has kind of put on them preseason, and I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with A&M when they come in here next week, but they will come in here next week coming off a win. They're going to beat Georgia, and it'll be a really big matchup. Tennessee against A&M. Yeah, that could be a game day game.
Yeah, it definitely could. I mean, if Tennessee wins, if A&M wins, it's potentially it'd be a 9 versus 9, right? Number 9 A&M versus 11 Tennessee right now. So I mean, if they both win, that could potentially be a top 10 showdown. I agree with you guys. I'm going Tennessee. I have been very low on Tennessee all year long, and that kind of made me eat some crow on Twitter. On Saturday, I tweeted that, I'm so happy I didn't buy into the Tennessee hype when they were down 21-0 to Florida, and then they stormed back with this incredible comeback.
You weren't the only one, buddy, just letting you know.
I know, but, you know, it's just, that was just interesting. I mean, good for them for making the comeback. We'll see how much momentum this gives them. We'll see if Dobbs finally, after 3 years, plays how people have said he's supposed to be able to play. But yeah, I mean, against Georgia, who just isn't, just, like you said, Zach, just quite frankly not very good. I got Tennessee.
All right, so far we haven't really had a whole lot of change of opinion here. We've got three A&Ms, we got three Tennessees. Are we gonna decide to choose some difference here?
We're the three best friends that anyone could have.
Well, this might be true, but we do have different opinions from time to time, and that's okay. This next game, Louisville at Clemson. Everybody is riding high on the Cardinal train. Everybody is talking about how great Louisville is, how great Lamar Jackson is. They're going to steamroll everyone. Lamar Jackson's the Heisman Trophy winner already. They're putting him up on their shoulders. It's going to be a ticker tape parade in Louisville. Well, guess what? Clemson is going to upset that ticker tape parade this week. I got the Tigers winning it at home. They're going to be touching all over that rock, whatever. What's the rock
Howard's
called?
Rock.
Howard's Rock. Not, and they don't even add a last name to it. It's just Howard's. They're going to be getting the win at home this week. I think Clemson is going to upset the Louisville Cardinals train.
This is the toughest game we're going to pick. Number three versus number five, two, you know, pretty high powered offenses. Clemson looked like they were finally getting it together last week against Georgia Tech on Thursday night. But I got to go with Louisville. Lamar Jackson is just incredible to watch. He's so fun. Reminds a lot of people, obviously, of Michael Vick. He has more touchdowns than every single FBS program except for Michigan this season. He's got like 25 total touchdowns. So I got Louisville to come in there, and much like Florida State did during their national championship run with Jameis, I got them coming in and surprising the home folk in Clemson.
I have to agree. I think Lamar Jackson's the real deal. I think it's interesting to see him go into go against the program that seemed to kind of be exactly what Louisville is at this point, or should have been at this point. But I think that they just have way too much firepower and are going to keep that train rolling. Because if you look at Clemson, yeah, they've seemed to recover a little bit, but I still have to go back to that game against Auburn, and after seeing Auburn firsthand against A&M, it's not a great football team. I mean, they do play defense well, but it's not a great football team, and so for that score to come out like it was, that's telling to me a little bit. So that's I have a Louisville coming out strong in that one.
Well, they also had to go up against an SEC power offense, too, in Auburn, and they were able to slow them down to only, 13 points. So Clemson, I don't know. We'll see. I like Dabo Swinney, but that maybe is just maybe because his name is Dabo and his last name is Swinney.
Is his actual name Dabo? No, that's
not his real name. Okay. I don't even know. I think his real name's like Lester or something.
Okay, I'd go by
mistaken.
Dabo too.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that's anything. William Christoph.
Yep.
Christopher. Yeah. Just Christoph.
Interesting. I'd definitely go by Dabo.
So anyways, instead of WC, he goes by Dabo. So all three of us got Texas A&M. All three of us have Tennessee. I am the one lone man that's picking Clemson to win this week, and so Dabo Swinney is the guy. The next game that we've got on the slate is, and I think this is going to be a tough one to pick as well, Texas at Oklahoma State. As badly as I want to pick Okie Light to win at home in Stillwater, I think Texas is going to win this one. No telling how many points are going to be scored in this game. I think it's going to be very reminiscent of the Cal game. I think that it's going to be close all the way down to the wire, and the over-under for points will probably close to be 100. But I think Texas, having 2 weeks to prepare for this game, just coming off a very disappointing loss at Cal, I think the Horns are going to be ready for this one. I've got Texas beating Oklahoma State.
I'm going to let my inner Lee Benson shine here a little bit and say, man, the Big 12 is bad. The Big 12 is bad this year. It's almost a coin flip for me a little bit, because you can lean back on the laurels of what Texas is able to do against Notre Dame, but then again, what has Notre Dame done? I don't think they were the team that we thought they were to begin the season.
They aren't who we thought they were.
And then there's the Cal game, which is just ridiculous. And then you have Central Michigan. You have Oklahoma State against Baylor. It's just kind of a mess. You know, give me the Horns going up there to Okie Light and taking care of business. I think it's going to be a close game, but I also think it's a coin flip. And I think Texas has a little bit more, just a little bit more talent than Oklahoma State. especially with kind of what Shane Buechele's been able to do if he's stayed on the field and been healthy, and the kind of defense that Texas has played at times, maybe not against Cal, but at times. I think Texas, but, you know, whatever.
All right, great reference there. I'm going to be different. I'm going Oklahoma State. I really like Mason Rudolph, the Cowboys quarterback. I love James Washington, the wide receiver, who had like 300 yards receiving in their game against Pitt. Like Travis, both of you said, there will be no defense. Defense is not allowed. They might as well just be playing 7-on-7.
It's overrated anyways.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Oklahoma State is going to have a little bit more firepower. Plus, they'll be at home. So I'm going pistols firing.
Going Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy and his mullet are going to be getting it done against the UT Longhorns on Saturday. And you talk about if Texas loses that game, Charlie Strong, already his seat was hot, and everybody was so excited about the early 2-0 start, but might have been a little jumping the gun there a little bit.
I mean, they are better this year than they've been since he's been there, but. Are they as good as everyone at Texas thinks they should be at this point? Probably not. But they have incredibly way too high expectations.
Well, again, and if your coach is one of the top paid guys, I mean, Kevin Sumlin's name has been thrown around as a hot seat as well. So if his seat at least was warm coming into the season, imagine Charlie Strong's. So Colin's got Oklahoma State winning at Oklahoma State. Both myself and Travis have Texas getting the win in that one. Another game, Travis's TCU Horned Frogs going to be hosting the Oklahoma Sooners. And this is another game in which I haven't been completely impressed with either one of these teams. I think this is going to be another high-scoring game, though. They both have very good offenses, I think, and pretty good quarterbacks as well. But I think Baker Mayfield is the better quarterback than Kenny Hill. I think that's going to be the big difference maker in this game. I think Oklahoma wins at Amon G. Carter Stadium.
Yeah, you know, you're generous to say that TCU's offense is good. They're good at times, but it's very streaky and very inconsistent. I think I read an article the other day, one of the kind of stat-related websites that I can't remember right now, that said TCU actually leads the nation in drop passes, too. So that doesn't necessarily help when you have a kind of a quarterback like Kenny Hill who's kind of trying to find his way in this offense and with this new program. But TCU's defense is atrocious. They are very, very undersized. You got basically safeties playing linebacker, other than maybe Ty Summers, who is a good linebacker size per se. But I mean, if you look in the last week, I don't even actually understand why TCU is ranked, because they were up on SMU 6-3 at halftime in the game last week, and it took a couple of picks by, I believe, a freshman SMU quarterback late in the game to really kind of solidify a 33-3 win in that game. TCU's just really not that good. I think they've been able to do enough not to be super exposed for some of the major holes that they have so far this season, but I think OU will definitely do that job. OU will win this game.
Yeah, I haven't been super impressed with either team either. Obviously, Oklahoma had just a brutal schedule in the first three games. You play Houston, down in Houston, and then Louisiana Monroe, and which is obviously isn't that tough a team. But then Ohio State, I mean, they have played as tough of a schedule as anybody. So their record a little bit more indicative of the schedule they played, but they haven't been impressive. And then TCU, I mean, Travis laid it out better than either of us could, Zach, what their issues are. But I'm going to go with Oklahoma to get it done.
Yeah, talking about TCU, it's not good, Bob. Not real good. So all three of us have OU going into Fort Worth at the dreaded Amon G. Carter Stadium and knocking off the Horny Toads. Another game. Well, this will be our final one. We've got Oregon, Collins, Oregon Ducks.
Alma mater.
At Washington State. And one Mike Leach, who is always quote-worthy, came out a couple of weeks ago breaking his team over the coals, which is nothing new for him, talking about how they needed to learn some things, how can they change things around. And, of course, Oregon's coming off a tough loss at Nebraska. That was a really good game, but they ended up getting upended by the Nebraska Cornhuskers in Lincoln. Tell you what, this is a really tough one for me. And I picked the Ducks last week to win at Nebraska. They let me down. But I have faith, brothers. I have faith And the Oregon Ducks, I think they will go and pull this one out against the Cougars. I got Ducks winning at Washington State.
Oh, man. Well, this is... So I graduated from Oregon in 2013. This is probably the worst Oregon team since 2004. They didn't make a bowl game in 2004. This is by far the worst team they've had since 2004. You left out that they lost to Colorado at home last week. They lost to Nebraska 2 weeks ago.
Hey, don't knock out Colorado. Oh, yeah, that's right, because they lost to Nebraska a couple weeks ago. Remember we had Aaron on. We were talking to her. So, but I think Colorado, I think the Buffs are back, baby. I think Colorado is a team to be reckoned with in the Pac-12.
We'll see about that. But the fact remains, Oregon gave up 40 points to Colorado's backup quarterback. Sefa Lufau, who's Colorado starter, was out injured. And this guy who was athletic, he made some throws. He put up 40 points against Oregon's defense, which Brady Hoke was supposed to come in and fix. Why anybody trusts anybody from Michigan, I don't know. But this game, the Oregon's just not good. And it's really frustrating as an alumni who was there during the golden era of Oregon football, four BCS bowls, with Chip Kelly, my 4 years of school. So it's really frustrating to see what they've kind of turned into. And they lost to Washington State at home last year in overtime. And for a team that doesn't have a defense, that's really not a good thing to not have a defense when you're going to play a Mike Leach team who usually only has an offense. So this is going to be like those Big 12 games that we were just picking where it might be like a 55-50 final. Man, I don't know. Oregon's not
whatever.
Good.
Whatever, man.
Oregon's not good. I'll pick them. I'm picking Oregon. I don't feel good about it. They're not good, America. But yeah, Ducks.
That might be the best pick we've ever had. I agree with a lot of what Colin said there. Yeah, I think give me the pirate and his crew in this one.
My head tells me to do that. My heart told me otherwise.
Yeah, give me the pirate and his crew to get in that one. And I also just want to put out there that I think Colin put Oregon and the state of Michigan on blast in that last pick. So y'all, if you're listening from Michigan, it's at KAGS _ Colin.
Yeah, so whatever. Is Michigan going to disagree with me that Brady Hoke was terrible there? No, they're not.
There you go. Well, everyone, that is the My Aggie Nation podcast for this week. A big thanks to Colin Deaver from KAGS TV here in Bryan College Station. A big thanks also to Brent Zwornerman for coming on and talking a little A&M South Carolina with us and everything surrounding the SEC right now. We are headed to what is South Carolina? The what state?
Williams-Grice Stadium.
Well, right. Oh.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Is it Crescent?
The upstate.
There you go.
The upstate.
We're heading to South Carolina for that game. We'll have all kinds of great stuff on all of our respective media outlets, so go ahead and check all of that out. The next week we'll be back here for that big, potentially ranked matchup against Tennessee, so look ahead forward to that. But South Carolina this week. So tune into that, tune into us, tune in next week, and we'll see you then on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
It seems like every day everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't want to make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't want to make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be, all that we can be.